New York, where the American stage begins, NBC presents Best Plays, transcribed with John Chapman. Best Plays, a series of hour-length dramas selected from the outstanding successes of the New York stage. Now, John Chapman, editor of the theatrical yearbook Best Plays, and drama critic of the New York Daily News, is here to introduce Frederick March and Florence Eldridge in Robert E. Sherwood's There Shall Be No Night. Mr. Chapman.
Soon after Russia invaded Finland, Robert E. Sherwood heard a broadcast from Helsinki, a broadcast for help from America. This broadcast aroused Sherwood to anger, to pity, and to a desire to do something. What he did was to write at white heat his Pulitzer Prize-winning There Shall Be No Night. When Alfred Lunt saw the script, he too was aroused, because he had been brought up by a Finnish stepfather. And so it was that one of our great Mr. and Mrs. acting teams, Lunt and Fontan, began playing There Shall Be No Night in the spring of 1940. This play has lost none of its excitement or pity or anger with the passing years. And to present it to you this evening, we have another of our great Mr. and Mrs. acting teams, Frederick March and Florence Eldridge, as that fine and gentle Finnish couple, Dr. and Mrs. Valkonen.
Ready, Doctor?
Yes, Mr. Corwin.
Just talk into the microphone.
What shall I say?
Say something profound, darling.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Keep going. We want to test the line.
More? How do you do, my dear friends in America? How are you? I am well. And do you know that the human digestive tract extends for 25 to 30 feet and consists of the following main parts: the mouth, pharynx, esophagus, stomach, small intestine.
Carlos.
That's fine, Doctor. How was it, Gus?
Good. Just talk the same way, Dr. Balkin.
But please, Carlos, just read what's written. Don't discuss the digestive organs.
You see what happens, Mr. Corey, when a Finn marries a squeamish American woman. This broadcasting equipment you brought into our house looks even more complicated than the digestive tract. How does it operate?
Well, roughly, your voice travels from the microphone to that box Gus is fooling with. That's called the mixer. Then it goes to the broadcasting station here in Helsinki, then under the Gulf of Finland to Geneva, where it's broadcast by shortwave to America.
They were listening in New Bedford, Massachusetts?
They listen to all sorts of strange things on Sunday in New Bedford.
Mrs. Valkonen is from New Bedford. You've been there, Mr. Corwin?
I couldn't be sure.
Depressing place, but good people. All of the pictures you see in our living room came from New Bedford. This is my wife's father on the wall.
A most degenerate man.
Ah, Uncle Valdemar. Mr. Corwin, this is my uncle, Mr. Sederstrom. Mr. Corwin and Mr. Gus of the American Radio.
How do you do, Mr.
Hi.
If you'd like the music, Uncle Valdemar can play the piano. He's very good, a very great musician.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Valkonen, but I think we can manage without it.
Look, Uncle, look. My voice goes in here, and then it gets mixed. And then it goes all over America. Even Minnesota, Mr. Corwin?
Oh, yes.
That's frightening.
You know, I've been broadcasting for a year all over Europe. And I still get mic fright when they say, go ahead, Vienna. Or come in, Prague.
You were in Prague during the crisis?
I just came from there. And Munich.
Munich also. You know, when we read in the papers, we couldn't believe it.
I believed it. I lived in Germany. I studied music there.
Carlos, it's almost time. You'd better read over your speech.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Hey, excuse me, please.
Yes. How did you and your husband meet, Mrs. Valkonen?
We met in Russia in 1914. That was when my father was coming to the end of a brilliant career as a family spendthrift. Carlos was a medical officer in St. Petersburg. Uh-huh. And that's what they called it then. Oh, he was so handsome. Thin, dark, tragic looking. I was 17. Then came the war and we had to leave for America. It was the end of the world for me. I pestered him with letters regularly, and after the revolution he came to America to study. After considerable effort on my part, we were married.
Then he brought her back here to Finland and we all said, is she rich? And he said, no, So we said, you're a fool.
Oh, no.
But Uncle Valdemar has forgiven me since. I was lucky enough to present him with a grandnephew.
Oh, I'd like to meet your son. How old is he?
17.
Well, if you'll forgive me, you don't look it.
Oh, thank you. Eric's on holiday working, but we expect him any moment now. They spend all their holidays in this country working. You've never seen people with so much energy.
I suppose your son is completely a Finn.
He hasn't quite made up his mind. But now that he has a girlfriend, she'll probably make it up for him.
He's a good Finn. Oh, my rheumatism.
Oh, haven't those treatments done you any good?
No.
Well, we're going to Italy soon for a holiday, and we'll take you. That should make you well.
Holidays. I know what those holidays are like. All Carlo does is visit lunatic asylums.
My husband considers the study of neurology pleasure as well as work.
We're getting Geneva. It's almost time, Dave.
Okay, girl. Ready, doctor?
Hmm? Oh, yes, yes. Oh, this is the most dull speech. I hate to read.
Hello, Charlie. This is Gus. No, it's beautiful up here. Hey, there can't possibly be another crisis this year. No kid. Okay, yeah, I've got a time check. 43, woof. Okay, stand by. Okay, then.
Get ready.
This is station WEAF, New York. We take you now for a special broadcast to the Finnish capital of Helsinki and NBC correspondent David Corwin. Go ahead, Helsinki.
Hello, America. This is David Corwin in Helsinki. We're bringing you the first in a series of broadcasts from Finland, Sweden, and Norway, those little countries far in the north of Europe which are at peace and intend to remain at peace. Finland is a country with a population about equal to that of Brooklyn. Like many other small nations, it achieved its freedom 20 years ago, but unlike some others, it has consolidated that freedom. It has made democracy work. I am now speaking from the home of Dr. Carlo Valkonen, the eminent neurologist who has received high honors from many nations and who has just been awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine for his contribution to the understanding of mental disease. Many of you have read his book, The Defense of Man, and he is known to many others as he has lived much in America, and Mrs. Valkonen is a native of New Bedford, Massachusetts. I give you Dr. Valkonen.
I never heard so much introduction.
Well,
Dr. Valkonen?
to tell the truth, I think the Nobel Prize was premature since I did not yet finish the work. But still, I'm glad to have the prize because the money will enable us to go on a holiday. Now I will read. Dr. Carrel has said, for the first time in history, a crumbling civilization is capable of discerning the causes of its decay. For the first time, it has the gigantic strength of science. And he asks, will we use this power? This question is more important than the possible results of the Munich crisis. It is no doubt known to you that insanity is increasing at an alarming rate. Indeed, the day is in sight when the few remaining sane people will be put into confinement and the lunatics will be at large. Does this seem an exaggeration? Then look about you. You see the spectacle of a brilliant nation where the spiritual resistance of its people has been so lowered that they are willing to discard all moral sense, all principles of justice and civilization. It is all very well to say free men will triumph over slaves. But how long can free men possess the spiritual strength that enables them to be free? That is a problem science has not solved. True, in the fight against disease, we've been remarkably successful. Tuberculosis, typhoid, the number of fatalities is being steadily reduced. But then look at the degenerative diseases, insanity, the degeneration of the mind, and cancer, the degeneration of the tissues. These are the diseases which are going up in almost the same proportion as the others are going down. Degeneration. That is the most terrifying word in our vocabulary. Doctors are beginning to ask, is there not a suspicious connection between our victories and our defeats? Are we perhaps saving our children from measles and mumps that they may grow up to be neurotics and end their days in a madhouse? We have counted too heavily on pills and serums. Just as we have counted too heavily upon concrete fortifications and navies to protect our frontiers. What good are these if man lacks the power of resistance within himself? I'm not pleading for a return to measles and mumps. I'm only saying that all of us have been trying too hard to find the easy way out. There is no coming to consciousness without pain, says Dr. Jung. You've heard it said that the days of exploration are over, but I promise you that the greatest of all adventures is still before us. The exploration of man himself, his mind, his spirit. Know thyself, said the oracle. Can we learn before it is too late? Before the process of man's degeneration has been completed, and he is again a witless ape, groping his way back into the jungle?
Garlet, why should I go on reading and spoiling your Sunday? I want to send greetings to New Bedford, Massachusetts. And to them and to all my friends in America, I say thank you and God bless you and goodbye.
Thank you, Dr. Carlo Vulkanen. This is David Corwin in Helsinki, returning you now to NBC in New York.
Ah. Okay, everybody.
Ooh. Hey,
so was it?
Never will I speak into one of those evil things again.
Darling, you are wonderful. Wasn't he, Uncle Valdemar?
If they listen to that, they listen to anything. Yes.
Oh, no. Very good, Doctor.
You really think so?
Came through fine. I liked it myself. I'm going to get your book.
Why, thank you.
I'll pack up this.
Right, Gus.
Hey, what a charming man that Mr. Gus.
You know, the other day in Munich, when I got word to come up here, I tried to buy your book.
Huh?
The bookseller assured me solemnly that there could be no such book.
If my books weren't forbidden in Germany, Mr. Corwin, I'd be ashamed of myself.
Ah, anybody home?
Eric! Miranda! Eric's home! And Patsy, hello, my dear.
Hello, Doctor. Look, I brought this from Vipuri.
Vipuri in the Rinkelia. I'll have it in my coffee.
Mr. Corwin, this is our son, Eric. And Katsi Alquist.
How do you do?
You missed it. I was wonderful on the radio.
I tried to get back, Papa, but we had work to finish.
You see, Mr. Corwin, huh? I'm an object of contempt to my 17-year-old. While I talk, he's a man of action. He's been working on the Mannerheim line.
Oh, I seem to have heard of it.
It's on the Isthmus, on the Russian frontier. Our own little Maginot.
You don't say.
I tell him it's silly, but he won't listen. These little concrete pillboxes and tank caps.
Well, what's the difference as long as they enjoy doing the work?
Oh, I suppose it's good exercise. Hundreds of students do it. Katri here also goes and works. They have a lot of fun, you know, maybe a little romance in the evening, eh, Katri?
In the evening we have discussions, Martin. Well, right now we'll have a drink. I made some Parker House punch just to celebrate Papa's broadcast. The Parker House Bar was the first place my father headed for after they read the family will. I may not be able to do much else, but I can make the best rum punch in Europe. If you're here on New Year's Day, you must join us, Mr. Corwin. And Mr. Gus, too.
Oh, I'm sure we won't forget. Please. How about a toast?
Oh, let me. To the late Alfred Nobel.
Ah, the dynamite king.
Oh, Eric.
I don't care where the money came from, Eric. $40,000 to Alfred Nobel.
Yes. What are you studying in school, Eric?
Economics and sociology.
Yeah, and skiing. He can't make up his mind whether he wants to be another Karl Marx or an Olympic champion.
No. Have you been much in the Soviet Union?
Oh, yes. We lived there when Father was working with Pavlov.
And you really believe they might invade Finland?
We have to be prepared.
I admit the Nazis have been highly successful in the... well, in terrifying people of the Bolshevik menace, but... all the times I've been in Moscow, I've never seen anything but a passionate desire to be let alone in peace.
Oh, Uncle Valdemar, must you play now we're talking?
I'll play softly.
See, I know the Russians too, Mr. Corwin. They love to plot, but they don't love to fight. They're like the Italians. They're too charming. They don't know how to hate.
Oh, I'll answer it.
What's that you're playing, Mr. Sederstrom?
Sibelius.
Look who's come to visit, Carlo.
Well, Dr. Simpson.
How do you do, everyone? Oh, don't let me interrupt you.
Nazis. This is Mr. Corwin of the American Radio.
Oh, I've heard a good deal of you.
Dr. Simpson is the German consul general in Helsinki. He knows about everybody.
My hobby. Only this minute I talked to Berlin on the phone here, Doctor. They said your broadcast came through excellently and was highly entertaining.
It was broadcast in Germany, Mr. Simpson?
Unfortunately not. But it was heard on the government shortwave monitor.
I seem to remember I said some things that were not for your government to hear.
We are accustomed to hear the worst about ourselves here, Doctor. We always hear Mr. Corwin here.
Well, you mustn't be frightened by Dr. Simpson. He was an anthropologist before he became a diplomat. He's most broad-minded.
Coffee, Dr. Simpson?
Oh, thank you, Eric. Is the work getting on well at the Mannerheim?
It seems to be. I see only a small part of it.
The Finnish defenses are magnificent. No one will challenge them.
The Czechs had fine defenses, too.
Ah, but the Finns are more intelligent. They have no allies to betray them. How do you feel about that, Mr. Corrine?
I'm afraid I have no feelings, Doctor. I've been de-educated. I've covered Manchukuo, Ethiopia, Spain, China, Austria, Czechoslovakia. All I can say now is that when Dr. Valkonen says the human race is in danger of going insane, he is not so much a prophet of future doom as a reporter of current fact. Well, I seem to be sounding off the Parker House punch, no doubt.
Have some more.
Well, I'm afraid I have to be pushing off. Gus?
All ready, Dave.
Now, do come back for New Year's.
I'll try.
Good.
Goodbye, Miss Alquist.
Goodbye.
Eric?
Oh, come back soon.
Doctor?
I'll see you two gentlemen to the door. Excuse me, please.
What a nice man. You like him, Eric?
Well, I would like to travel all over like that.
I wouldn't like it. It makes you bitter.
No. A journalist like Mr. Corwin has an opportunity to see the truth. Of course, maybe the ultimate truth is the ultimate futility.
Oh, dear. You know, Eric, you really should have a beard, even at 17. Play something gay, Uncle Valdemar.
David Corwin in Stockholm. The November skies are gray over little Finland this week. Tonight, many Finnish eyes look toward the skies. The situation with the Soviet Union has reached the breaking point, and it may only be a matter of hours before the diplomatic war erupts into a shooting war.
Oh.
Why did you turn it off, Eric?
I don't like to listen to such things.
It's true, though. Only a moment ago, you were watching out the window.
I was looking at the stars.
There are no stars. You were watching for bombers.
No, Katri, there are no bombers coming here.
That's what they said in Poland, but they came.
They were Nazi bombers.
The Russians went into Poland, too.
Oh, yes, it cost them nothing. The Nazis had done the work. But they know if they attack us, it would mean a betrayal. The suffering would be insignificant compared to the murder of their own honor.
I don't believe they had any honor.
But two people who are going to be married, we disagree too much. Huh? You haven't changed your mind, have you?
No.
Next summer, when I stop being a student?
Yes, sir.
Oh, we'll have a wonderful wedding, Katri. I can see it now with your father looking stern and magnificent in his colonel's uniform. And mother behaving like a grand duchess and Uncle Valdemar playing the piano. And then we'll escape from all of them. And go home. And have several children.
Well,
Katri. Oh. Why do you draw away?
I just thought, if war comes...
No, don't think about it. Just kiss me. Oh, Uncle Valdemar, I didn't hear you come in. Excuse me.
Yes, we were just...
You saw what you were doing. Did you hear the news just now?
We turned it off.
Our government has received a message from the United States government from Washington. They also sent the same message to Moscow, offering to help settle the Finnish-Soviet dispute.
Do you suppose the Russians will listen?
Of course they'll listen.
Eric says they won't attack. What do you say, Uncle Valdemar?
I say they will.
My father doesn't agree with you.
And what does he know?
As much as anyone could. He understands the Russians. He was a friend of Pavlov and Gorky and even Lenin himself.
All the gentlemen you mention are dead. And the revolution, that's dead, too. It's embalmed and exposed in a glass coffin in front of the Kremlin. It's respected, but dead.
Well, what's this?
Oh, just a discussion, Mother. Where's Papa?
At the laboratory still. He had about 30 dogs barking and howling around him when I left. What were you discussing?
Oh, whether the Russians will attack.
Mr. Walsh at the American Embassy told me they're ordering all Americans home. He was very guarded in his words, but he seems to think things are rather serious.
If they attack, then we'll fight.
With what?
With whatever we have.
And how long do you think that would last?
A few days, a few weeks, who knows?
And you, Eric, would you fight?
Yes, Mother. I would fight.
Spoken like a true boy scout. Don't be silly, Eric. He is not being silly. If he fights, he'll be dead. Don't listen to her, Eric. Why shouldn't he listen? I'm his mother. You're an American. You don't understand. I understand that Eric is my son. It's his life.
What good is his life if it has to be spent in slavery? How could an American understand?
No, no, Katri, of course. Mother can understand. Americans fought for the same thing, for the same reason.
Yes, but it's as your father says. When life becomes too easy for people, something changes their character. Something is lost. Americans are too lucky. Mrs. Valkonen, in your blood is the water of those oceans that have made you safe. Don't try to persuade Eric that life here should be as easy as it is in America. He's a Finn. The time has come when he must behave like one, please.
Oh, Katri, dearest.
Katri? Eric calls you dearest. Are you in love with each other?
Yes, Mother. We're going to be married.
Oh, I'm glad, very glad. I started to speak to you as children just now, and I find you're grown up.
Miranda, you know that litter of puppies? Out of 31, 7 are definitely... What's the matter?
Carlo.
What is it? Tell me.
Carlo, Eric and Katri are going to be married.
No.
Yes, Father.
Well, now you see, ever since he was a baby, I've been training him to be a gentleman of taste and discrimination. I congratulate you. It's almost unbelievable. We must have some schnapps and a big supper to celebrate.
Well, I'm afraid it will have to wait, Carlo. We're all going to church first.
To church? At night? Are you mad?
There's going to be a great service. The president and everybody will be there.
What for?
To pray that we'll be able to defend ourselves.
Defend ourselves? Against what? I won't hear any more of this talk.
You must hear it, Carlo. Eric is ready to fight.
I can fight as well as anyone.
Is that what people go to church to pray for? Ability to imitate our enemies in a display of force? Is that intelligent thinking?
Father, this is no time for intelligent thinking. When your enemies use force, you can't throw books at them.
No time for intelligent thinking. So this is the climax of the century of scientific miracles. This is what they worked for, Pasteur, Koch, Ehrlich, Lister. They saved our lives so we might build Mannerheim lines in which to die.
Now, if you don't want to go to church, we'll go along.
Oh, what's the use? I may as well come along.
Come, I'll help you dress.
Very well, but I reserve the right to say my own prayers.
Poor father. What a terrible thing for him. He has so much faith to lose while we have only our lives.
Eric. I do love you, Eric. I'm sorry if I said things...
What you said was true. Father and mother don't really live here in this country in this time. They live in the future as they imagine it. They're wonderful people, both of them. Wonderful and unreal. But you are real, Katri. You know what we have to face.
Eric, hold me. I'm so frightened. What's that sound?
Bombers. It can't be.
Eric, it is. It's a raid. Listen.
Good God. Those are Russian planes.
Eric!
What is it? What happened?
It's an attack, Father. Those are bombs.
God have pity. For that which we have greatly feared has come upon us. Miranda, is Carlo with you?
No, I left him at the hospital. Is Eric home?
Upstairs, packing.
Packing?
Joining the ski troops. He has to leave this afternoon. It's no use to try and stop him, Miranda.
No, I won't try. Is Katri here?
Not yet. She's helping in the square where the bombs fell.
Was it very bad?
Well, not as bad as expected. About 30 people killed. Alfred, the policeman, told me.
You see, it wasn't so bad after all. It never is.
Oh, Miranda, you don't know. You don't know.
You're a pessimist.
Pessimist? Last year, when I was in Germany, I saw the Nazis. And I saw men marching, 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 day and night. Today, Germany, tomorrow, the world. They didn't even know where they were marching to, and what's worse, they didn't care. Just to march was enough. I remember I was with one of my friends, an old musician, looking from the window of his house. Across the street, a truckload of young Nazis were wrecking the home of a Jewish dentist.
I remember he whispered to me, they say they're doing that to fight Bolshevism. Well, it's a lie. They are Bolshevism.
They can't win.
Can we stop them?
You're a good Christian. You must believe they can't win.
I can also believe in the coming of Antichrist. And Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go forth to deceive the nations.
Hello, anybody home?
In here, Carla.
Well, see who I brought home with me. Mr. Corwin. He came back to Helsinki.
Hello, Mrs. Walkenin. Oh, Mr. Sederstrom. I was on my way to see you and met your husband on the bus.
Oh, how nice to see you. Will you stay now?
As long as there's a war. The real reason I came here is that I was talking to Jim Walsh at the American Legation. He asked me to beg you both to leave Finland. He can get passage for you to Sweden by plane.
And did you hear that? It's very nice of Mr. Walsh, but unfortunately I am needed here for a while. A great shortage of doctors. I might be needed at the front.
Well, that isn't exactly suitable work for a winner of the Nobel Prize.
Not suitable work for any member of the human race, Mr. Corwin, but someone must do it.
Why must it be you and Eric?
Eric?
He's upstairs packing his things. He leaves in a few hours for the army.
When did he decide this?
A long time ago, if war came.
So, one by one, who'll that be? Come in. Ah, Herr Simpson, come in. You remember Mr. Corwin?
Of course. How do you do? I came to say goodbye to all of you.
No, we're not going.
I am going.
Oh.
Back to Germany. I can only stay a few minutes.
Sorry to hear that, but I can understand this is not the place for you under the circumstances.
It is not the place for you either, Valtinen. I advise you also to go.
First Mr. Corwin tells me, and now you.
Mr. Corwin is a remarkably informed man. He is aware of the inevitable outcome of this war. 200,000 Finns against 10 million.
Very well. We'll be conquered and ruled from Moscow just as we used to be ruled from St. Petersburg. I shall continue my experiments.
You
maybe
are
a little
being
more
naive, Doctor.
Naive?
Do you think your enemies are these communists who now invade your country?
That is what I think.
The Russians think so, too, but they are wrong. We are your enemies, Doctor.
You speak with undiplomatic frankness.
Dr. Volkanen is a scientist, a accustomed to facts.
What is going to happen to Finland, Doctor?
What happened to Poland? It is dead. It will never rise again. Today, the remnants of the Polish people are scattered from the Rhine to the Pacific coast of Siberia. This is a studied technique, a process of annihilation. It was not invented in Moscow. You will find the blueprints of it not in Das Kapital, but in Mein Kampf.
You are a scientist. Do you approve of this technique?
Naturally, I regret the necessity, but I admit the necessity. It is necessary in constructing our great state that inferior races be considered as slaves.
As a scientist, how can you establish proof that these races are inferior? You know it's a lie.
Of course it is a lie biologically. But we prove it by the simple expedient of asserting our superiority. If you resist, you will die.
Where can one go to escape?
I assure you, the United States is secure for the present.
Well, Doctor, I appreciate your motives in warning me. I understand all you say is confidential.
Oh, no. If it were confidential, I would not say it in front of Mr. Corwin. You may repeat it all. You will not be believed. The proof of our superiority is that our objectives are so vast that pygmy-minded enemies simply have not the capacity to believe them. I advise you to believe me, Dr. Valkanen, and to make haste. I say goodbye, Herr Doctor. I hope we part friends. Frau Valkanen, Mr. Corwin, my compliments.
I'll see you to the door.
Corwin.
Yes?
You're going back to the American Legation?
Yes.
Please do for me a favor. Tell your Mr. Walsh that Mrs. Valkanen would like to go on the airplane to Sweden. Ask him to arrange passage at once.
But does your wife know about
it? I'll explain to her later. Shh, please. She's coming back.
There's something about Beekman I don't like.
Well, I guess I'll be going. It's nice seeing all of you again.
You'll take care of our little matter.
Yes, yes. Goodbye, all. Now, don't bother. I'll find my way.
What is this little matter between you and Mr. Corwin?
Nothing at all.
Carlo, I know you too well for that.
Very well. I may as well tell you now. I want you to go home to America. It's all arranged.
What? What about you?
Naturally, I will stay. Afterward, I'll come to America for you.
Suppose you're killed.
I am a doctor.
A bombing plane can't tell an ordinary person from a Nobel Prize winner.
Don't argue, Miranda. You must go.
Why? Why, Carlo?
Why? What? Because this is a war for Finnish people. Every one of us knows what he must do. You, what? Why? What are you trained to do but wear lovely clothes and be a charming hostess? This is not your country. It's not your war. Now go.
This is the country of my husband and my son.
Eric will understand. He has American blood.
So his American blood will tell him it's perfectly all right for me to run away. I didn't know you thought so little of me, Carlo.
Miranda, please don't put words in my mouth.
Then say what you mean, Carlo. Say it.
Very well. I cannot drive you to safety with lies. You know me too well. The truth is, we've been living in a dream. And now I wake up and I'm frightened. I shouldn't even talk to you like this.
You should never be afraid to say anything to me, darling.
Suddenly realize what and where I am. I'm a man working in the apparent security of a laboratory. I'm trying to defeat insanity, degeneration of the human race. And then a band of pyromaniacs sets fire to the building in which I work. What can I do until the fire is put out? I cannot continue to work. There can be no peace of mind, no freedom from fear. Nobody is immune, not even a scientist in his laboratory. Darling, I can stand this ordeal if I know you are safe, that you are beyond their reach. I love you. And that's the only thing left in my world which is real. I love you.
If you love me, Carlo, then this is where I want to be. With you.
Mother, Papa, excuse me for interrupting. I have to leave now. We're due at the station at 5, and I want to see Capri before I go.
Of course, of course. To think I should see my son in a uniform. You're going to the north?
I'm joining a ski detachment.
I take it you know what you're doing, what chance you have against what you face?
Yes, Father. I think I know about that.
Very well, Eric. There's nothing for us to do then but say goodbye.
You're not angry at me for enlisting without telling
me? No, I'm not angry. And good luck, son.
Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye, Eric. Goodbye, my son.
Before I go, I want you both to know that I'm sorry. I know this is worse for you than for me or Katri. If it's any consolation to you, I hope you'll remember. You have a son who at least obeys the fourth commandment. I honor my father and my mother.
In a moment, Act Two of There Shall Be No Night, starring Frederick March and Florence Eldridge. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. Now, Act Two of the Best Plays production of There Shall Be No Night by Robert E. Sherwood, starring Frederick March and Florence Eldridge. Here again is John Chapman.
The play we're enjoying now won the Pulitzer Prize in 1941. Well, we're happy to announce that Best Plays has won a modest award of its own when the publication Radio and TV Life selected this program as the best dramatic radio show of the year. We appreciate it very much. Now, let's return to New Year's Day, 1940, and the Helsinki home of Dr. Valkonen.
Miranda?
Yes, Carlo?
Miranda, come and see my uniform. I'm leaving in an hour.
So soon?
Yes, Mr. Corwin and some soldiers are going to pick me up in an ambulance and drive me to Viipuri. They should be here any minute. You'd better fix the egg.
Oh, egg take off the coat until you go. I don't like to see you in a uniform, Carlo.
Oh, don't take it so seriously, my dear. Everything is going well at the front.
And why do they want more doctors at Viipuri? I thought there were not many wounded.
That is because most of the wounded are frozen to death before they can be brought in. When warmer weather comes, they'll need doctors.
Oh, why don't we hear from Eric? It's been a month now he's been on the Isthmus.
Eric is all right, Miranda. After all, I see all the casualty lists. It isn't easy to write in the Arctic. Ah, that must be Mr. Corwin. He said he'd be here right after his New Year's broadcast.
I'll get it. Oh, how do you do?
Well, happy nice New Year. To see you. Happy New Year. Oh,
come in. I was just fixing the eggnog.
Well, I may overtax your hospitality. I have three other boys here, all going up front with your husband.
Oh, do all
please,
come
please.
In.
Okay, boys. Come on in here. Major.
Mrs. Volkanin.
Dr. Volkanin. This is Major Rutkowski.
Madame.
And this is the American Expeditionary Force in Finland.
Oh,
Ben Gitchner of Cincinnati.
How do you do?
And Joe Burnett of Haverford, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Ben's an ambulance driver. He used to work for American Express in Paris. Joe here flies airplanes. He went to Princeton.
Just until they threw me out.
Well, Joe writes poetry. I guess they couldn't stand it.
What about you, Major? Where are you from?
I was in the Polish cavalry.
Oh, really? How did you manage to get here?
The survivors of my regiment were driven into Lithuania by the Nazis. I was working my way to Sweden when the Russians invaded, so I stopped.
How did you get here, Mr. Burnett?
I was languishing in a medieval dungeon in Spain for the past couple of years.
Oh, he's a little crazy, like most Americans. Ben here is a pacifist.
Really?
I used to be.
Well, I suppose many of us are in that position. Well, gentlemen, suppose we have a toast. Mr. Corwin, you will propose, please, huh?
I really can't think of anything, Doctor.
I have a toast, gentlemen, if I may.
Oh, well, please.
I think this will come as a surprise even to my husband.
Huh?
I learned of it myself only now when I was upstairs with Cartry. Gentlemen, to my grandchild.
Miranda.
May he or she live in a peaceful world.
Well, congratulations.
Cartry,
a baby.
He learned of it just today.
But this is an occasion.
Yes. You know, it takes a good deal of courage to have a baby in these times, Mrs. Volkanin. It's almost like being born under a curse.
No, Mr. Corwin. Whatever happens, this child will not be born under a curse. It will be born to the greatest opportunity that any child has ever known. Remember that, Miranda. And be brave. Well, mustn't keep the army waiting, gentlemen. Goodbye, Uncle Valdemar. Goodbye, darling.
Before we leave, Doctor, I'd like to propose one more toast.
Long life to the Republic of Finland.
Yeah! Yeah.
Stand by, Dave.
Okay, Gus.
This is David Corwin in Helsinki. Last night, January 6th, 1940, the Russians, in a determined attempt to surround the Finnish army on the Karelian Isthmus, began making determined attacks along Viipuri Bay. The Mannerheim line has been totally shattered. The bombardment has reached 300,000 shells per day. And looking at the ruination of Viipuri this morning, I could not help but think of H.G. Wells' awful prophecy in Things to Come. Here was the collapse of Western civilization, the beginning of the age of frustration. I return you now to New York.
Was my level okay, Gus?
Well, we're lucky if they heard us at all with all the interference flying around. Guess they're in a pretty rough spot up there in Viipuri, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty bad, Gus.
Isn't that where Valkanin went to set up a field hospital?
I think so. Joe'll know more about that.
Hmm? Tell me, how was the bath, Joe?
Like a dream. You got a drink?
On the dresser. Last bottle of scotch in Finland. Help yourself.
Thanks.
Joe, when are you going back to the front?
Well, when they get that flying fish of mine operating again. Almost fell apart this morning. If they don't hurry up, the war will be over before they get it off the ground.
You think so?
Well, it won't be long now.
Well, how do you know, Joe?
Because this morning can you keep this confidential?
Why, I won't tell a soul, except the AP, UP, and NBC.
Well, they sent me out to reconnoiter. I was flying low. All of a sudden, I saw some staff cars. I dived down to give them a burst when I saw that they weren't Russians. They were Nazis. Gave me a kind of a thrill. I really let them have it.
I thought it was about time for the Nazis to be taking a hand in this operation. I guess they've had enough stalling and want the Russians to really get on to business.
Well, I'd like a few more licks before we close up shop. Hey, you got a clean shirt?
In the other room. Gus, fix Joe up with some clean stuff, will you?
Right. Come in here, Joe.
Sure, thanks.
Oh, what could that be? Come in.
Hello, Dave. Am I disturbing you?
Why, Miranda, come in. Not at all. I heard about Eric being wounded. I haven't been able to get to the hospital yet, but I'm...
You needn't go, Dave. Eric died this morning.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Would you... Is there anything I can do?
That's why I came. You met Cotty Alquist.
Well, yes, we drank a toast.
Well, Cotty and Eric were married this morning in the hospital before he died.
Oh, I didn't realize.
War makes the strange arrangements, Dave. He isn't well, and I've made arrangements to get her to Norway and then to New York.
What can I do to help?
I need $50 in American money.
Why, of course. Will it be enough?
Yes. You see, our Finnish money is completely worthless in other countries now. I hope it doesn't inconvenience you.
Miranda, I'm very proud that you came to me. Ah, here.
Thank you. We had an awful time persuading her.
I wish you were going with her.
Oh, I wish I could. She'll have a bad time all alone there. Perhaps she'll have a son. And he'll grow up to be a nice, respectable New Englander and go to Harvard and wonder why he has an odd name like Vulcan.
Did your husband know about Eric?
Well, I sent a letter, but you know how disorganized everything is.
Do you know where he is?
He was on Beasley when I last heard. He wrote that things were going badly and he was trying to organize a field hospital. The other one was bombed out. They're getting closer all the time, aren't they?
I'm afraid so. It won't be long now before they reach us.
That's why I'm so desperate to get Cartry out of the country. It means one little link with the future. It gives us an illusion of survival.
Perhaps it isn't just an illusion.
Perhaps not. Well, goodbye, Dave.
Goodbye, Miranda.
Doesn't look as if we're going to find any place for a hospital around here, Doctor.
Keep going, Ben.
Okay. How's the arm, Major Rutkowski?
Not bad. Be all right.
This is one heck of a war. I don't even know if this is Russian-occupied territory or not.
Yeah, there's the building. Stop up there.
Looks like a schoolhouse.
What do you think, Major?
You might as well try.
I'll scout it. You two wait here.
All right.
Hello? Anybody there?
Lift your hands and come in. Who are you?
We're not Russians and we're not armed.
Okay. Throw your hands. Well, glad to see you. I'm a bit jumpy these days. Sitting here for 6 hours now.
English?
Name of Gosden. I don't rightly know what my rank is, but I call myself Sergeant.
So are you. Ben Gittner, American.
Medical Corps?
The doctor and I are. We've got a Polish infantry major in the ambulance with a bad arm. Thought we might hold up here.
Well, you're quite welcome. I'll wave your friends to come along in.
Right. How'd you get out here?
Long story. Wife and two children evacuated to Cornwall. Lost my job in a furniture store. Too old for the British Army. Nothing to read in the papers except news of heroic little Finland. So here I am. And where I shall be tomorrow, I really can't say.
Go in here, Doctor. This is Sergeant Gosden.
Don't bother saluting.
Any more men here?
Just me, sir. I was with Captain Verty's command, and we got shelled bits. I stopped here for a rest.
This schoolhouse would do well for a field ambulance station.
Too exposed.
Like Finland, more clean and exposed. Hey, must have left school quickly. You see? Someone was writing on the blackboard.
You know, Doctor, I've been wanting to ask you a question.
Yes, Ben.
About your book. There's a lot in it I don't understand, but at the end, it really mixes me up.
Well, what is it at the end?
Oh, well, listen, I've got it here. I've been reading it in the ambulance. How long, O Lord, before we shall hear the sound of the seventh angel of the apocalypse? Have you forgotten the promise of St. John?
and they shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads, and there shall be no night there, and they need no candle, neither the light of the sun, for the Lord giveth them light. Now, how come you finish your scientific work with a quotation from the Bible?
The Jewish mystics who wrote those words somehow knew that man will find the true name of God in his own body, in the mysteries of his own mind, and there shall be no night there. That is the basis of all the work I have done.
You can't deny that the light is going out pretty fast everywhere else.
No. It is just beginning to burn with a healthy flame. I know this because I've seen it, man. I've seen it in all kinds of men of all races and all varieties of faith. They are coming to consciousness. Look at the millions of men now under arms and all those afraid that arms may be thrust upon them. Are there any illusions of glory among them? None whatever. Now, isn't that progress?
Well, far be it for me to argue, Doctor, but I can't see the difference whether men go to war because of illusions of glory or just the spirit of grim resignation.
There is the difference. Illusions, when shattered, leave men hollow. But grim resignation makes a man say, this is an evil job, but I have to do it. And when men say that, they are beginning to ask, but why do I have to do it? Why must this evil go on forever? Forgive me, gentlemen, I think I am lecturing at the Medical Institute. But the Russians are only a short distance away. This may be my last lecture, so permit me to finish. What you hear now, this terrible sound that fills the earth, it is the death rattle, the end of the primordial beast and the ultimate triumph of evolution, when men shall become genuinely human instead of part bogus angel, part brute.
What's that? Motorcycle.
Holy smokes, Doctor, it's Joe Burnett. Hey, Joe, in here!
Hello, Ben.
Well, Joe.
Doctor.
Hi.
Major.
Where did you drop from?
Drop is right. I was shot down about an hour ago. Managed to snag this motorcycle and saw your ambulance outside. Since it's the only Buick in Finland, I figured you were in here.
How do things look?
Bad. They were bringing up everything.
How's Helsinki?
Well, I was there yesterday. Dr. Valkanen, I don't know how to say it, but I want you to know that you have my sympathy.
Sympathy? But why?
You don't know about your son?
No. He's dead.
Yes. He died in the hospital of wounds.
When was this?
Well, maybe 2 days ago.
My wife, is she well?
Yes. I'm sorry to have to be the one who tells you.
Thank you. I'm sorry you had to undergo this embarrassment.
Well, you fellows better get out of here. The Russians are bringing up reserves by the truckload. The Finns are forming to drive them back, or try anyway, about 3 miles up the road. They don't have many men.
There are 5 of us here.
I'm a non-combatant, Major. So is Dr. Balkan.
There's no compulsion if you don't wish to go.
Well, I was headed to the air base at Ranconan, but if they need another infantryman...
I think you are much more valuable as a flyer. You'd better keep going to Ranconan.
I hate to do it.
It's an order.
Yes, sir.
I'll just join the reserves. I've had my rest now.
Doctor, I'll go with you and the sergeant. First, I'd like to write a letter, if I may. Perhaps you could take it with you, Mr. Burnett.
I'll try to deliver it, Doctor.
Excuse me for a moment. I'll write it from the next room. Go right ahead.
You fellows know he believes in the teachings of Christ. He believes them just like they were scientific facts that can yet be proved. He told me you can't resist evil by building Maginot lines, but the true defenses of the man himself. So now there's nothing left for the great thinker to do but take a gun and go up there and shoot.
How about you, Ben? What does the conscientious objector have to say about shooting a gun? An ambulance is one thing, but a gun kills men.
What do you think I say, Major? I think of the times I've sworn never to kill. Once I lost a good job back in the States because they thought I was a Red. I've spent hours arguing that the Soviet Union was the greatest sociological advance in history. Now go ahead, kid me.
What do you think our chances are, Major?
Nothing. I take it you fear we're all condemned to death. Yes.
Sort of a silly way to end one's life, isn't it? Well, I know a fellow who was hit by a taxi cab in Downing Street.
Dr. Volkanen is the one who suffers most. He's an optimist. He will be better dead.
Why do you say that?
My wife, my baby, my mother, my father... and Warsaw were there when the Nazis came. My wife is 24 years old. She's very beautiful. I read in Cardinal Hollon's report to the Pope that the good-looking women had been sent back to Germany to be whores. Well,
gentlemen.
Here's the letter, Mr. Burnett.
Good luck, man.
If you ever get to Cincinnati, Joe, send a word to my mother, Mrs. Bessie Gitchner. She's in the phone book.
I will, then, if I get back. Come on.
All right, gentlemen.
Major.
Yes?
Do you, you have a gun for me?
A revolver.
Thank you.
Mr. Garson, can I use your rifle?
I'm ready. Before you go, yes? I think you better take off that Red Cross armband.
So this is the way Valkonen ends his career. A Nobel Prize winner.
Listen, Dave. Can't you get his wife and the old man out of Helsinki?
It wouldn't matter if I could, Joe. They refuse to leave. They're going to wait here for whatever comes. The Russians, the Nazis, or both. They've even planned how they'll burn the house down.
What?
Oh, yes. That's a Finnish tradition, like this scorched earth policy of the Chinese. She doesn't care. She wants to stay here and die the way her husband did.
Well, it's a pity.
That's just what it is, Joe. 3 months ago, the Soviet troops marched in. They had brass bands and loads of propaganda with them. They thought it'd be a grand parade through Finland like May Day in Red Square. So now, several hundred thousand men have been killed. Millions of lives have been ruined. The Soviet Union has been reduced from the status of a great power to that of a great fraud. And the Nazis have won another bloodless victory.
She's coming in, Dave. Take it easy.
Well, we've washed all the dishes and put them away neatly, and now Uncle Valdemar and I haven't a thing to do till supper. Oh, do sit down, Dave, Mr. Burnett.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Vulcan, and I have to report the duty.
Oh, I'm sorry. But thank you so much for coming and bringing the letter and telling me about that little schoolhouse.
I'm glad I could get here. You've been very kind to me. I won't ever forget you or Dr. Vulcan. Goodbye, Mr. Sederstrom. So long, Dave. I'll probably be seeing you.
Goodbye, Joe.
Oh, I hope he comes through all right.
He might. What are you planning to do, Mrs. Valkonen? You can't just sit here and wait for them.
We have our plans, Dave. Here in this closet.
Guns?
We got them at the hospital for wounded soldiers. Uncle Valdemar and I have been practicing. Oh, not shooting, of course, but just learning how to work the mechanism. And if you can come in with the pass and chair, we'll light the fire. It's all ready down in the cellar. And then we'll go into the garden behind the stone wall. The guns and ammunition. You see, you put in a clip like this, and then you shove the bolt. And after each shot, you twist it and pull it back to throw out the empty shell. What do you think of that, Dave? My revolutionary ancestors would be quite proud of me.
I guess you really mean it.
We do.
Well, I wish you luck. I have to leave pretty soon.
Oh, before you go, Dave, I'd like a favor.
Okay.
Will you take this package and this letter? The package contains Charlie's signed pictures of Freud and Pavlov and Carrel and the Mayos. And then there's the Nobel gold medal. I'd like you to give them to Kotri to keep for her child. Her Boston address is on it. Carlo wrote this letter soon after he heard of Eric's death. He wanted to comfort me in his own curious way. Would you like to hear it?
Please.
He says, "In this time of our own grief, it is not easy to summon up the philosophy which has been formed from long study of the sufferings of others. But I must do it, and you must help me. You see, Carlo wanted to make me feel that I'm stronger and wiser."
Go on, Miranda.
"I have often read the words which Pericles spoke over the bodies of the dead in the dark hour when the light of the Athenian democracy was being extinguished by the Spartans. He told the mourning people that he couldn't give them any of the old words which tell how fair and noble it is to die in battle. Those empty words were old even then, 24 centuries ago. But he urged them to find revival in the memory of the commonwealth which they together had achieved. And he promised them that the story of their commonwealth would never die,
but would go on far away, woven into the fabric of other men's lives. I believe that these words can now be said of our own dead and our own commonwealth. I have always believed in the mystic peace of the resurrection. The great leaders of the mind and spirit, Socrates, Christ, Lincoln, were all done to death that the full measure of their contribution to human experience might never be lost. Now, the death of our son is only a fragment in the death of our country. But Eric and the others who gave their lives are also giving mankind a symbol. A little symbol, to be sure, but a clear one. Of man's unconquerable aspiration to dignity and freedom and purity in the sight of God. When I made that radio speech, you remember, Dave?
Yes, indeed.
I quoted from St. Paul. I repeat those words to you now, darling. We glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. There are men here from all different countries, fine men. Those Americans who were at our house on New Year's Day, and that nice Polish officer, Major Rakowski. They're all here. They are waiting for me now. So I'm closed. With all my love. Here it is, Dave. Take good care of it.
I shall, Mrs. Balkan. But it may be a long time before I can deliver it.
It'll be a long time before my grandchild learns to read.
I have to be going now. Goodbye, Mr. Sederstrom.
You will write to us from Stockholm.
I promise.
We'll miss you very much, Dave. You've really become part of our life here in Helsinki.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Mayor Miranda, we're alone now. Nothing to do but wait.
Play some music, Uncle. I'll fix a pot of coffee.
You're sure you want to do it this way?
Yes, Uncle. I'm sure.
Very well.
Just heard the Best Plays production of There Shall Be No Night by Robert E. Sherwood, starring Frederick March and Florence Eldridge. And here again is your host, drama critic John Chapman.
Those were tragic days and brave days. They are not forgotten. And this evening, Mr. March, Miss Eldridge, and their acting company have made them vivid once again. Now, our thanks to all. As for next week, we are going back to a different time and a different mood. Our play will be one of the greatest romantic dramas, Camille. Our Camille will be Eva Le Gallien, noted for her portrayal of this character. And with her will be Richard Waring. This is Chapman saying goodbye until then.
Be No Night was transcribed and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Robert Carroll as David Corwin, Joan Loring as Capri, William Redfield as Eric, Louis Van Ruten as Uncle Valdemar, Leon Janney as Dr. Ziemsen, William Zuckert as Gus, Bill Lipton as Major Rutkowski, Donald Buca as Joe Burnett, John Sylvester as Ben Gishner, and Ivor Francis as Sergeant Gosden. Best Plays is an NBC production supervised by William Welch and directed by Edward King. Your announcer is Fred Collins.
This is Louisville's Radio Center.